When I was 25 and a half, I started a podcast. The goal? To review some of the newest and the latest movies, along with some other stuff. With the help of my guests, I was able to do this, but there were dark forces tampering with my podcast, and with me. They called it an improvised podcast for some reason. I eventually found help in the form of myself. Yes, the me from a universe where the movies I reviewed got delayed. Apparently, my podcast made it to his universe. I know now that it is my duty, for the good of that universe, nay, the multiverse, to keep recapping and reviewing these movies, to hold listeners over until they could eventually see the movies as they were made in their world. For some reason, they come out differently in my world, but it's kind of entertaining that way. My name is Steven Schinder, and this is Delayed Replay. Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of Delayed Replay, that podcast where we recap and review movies because they got delayed in that other universe. Sometimes they came out this year, but in this instance, and like last week as well, this is a movie that came out last year in that other universe. Apparently it came out in August 2020. So yeah, kind of overdue, but it's coming out in September in that other universe, and we're recording in August 2021 right now. So, you know, it fits, it's whatever. So joining me once again, you may have heard him on several other episodes of this show. It is Mr. Multiverse.
I like that I'm becoming a recurring character on this story arc.
Yeah, like I was counting up the episodes earlier, and I think you and my friend Greg are tied in terms of like most amount of episodes appearances. Like I think you each have 9 now. So yeah, like you guys are neck and neck at the moment. So yeah.
Yeah. Do people like listening to me? I don't know. I don't know if I guess I've been here 9 times. Well, would it be 10 now?
This is the 9th one. I was counting this one as well.
Well, if they want me like here at least 9 times, I guess I'm doing something right.
Yeah, I vaguely remember. I don't remember which episode it was. Maybe it was the Shang-Chi one, but I remember Greg said that one was really fun to listen to. So yeah, I think that was the first one you were on.
I'm coming for that number 10 spot, Greg. Just you wait.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, on this episode, we're talking about Malignant, not to be confused with Maleficent. Yeah, I've never seen Maleficent like ever and don't really plan to. But before we get into Malignant, I guess we can go into like what other James Wan movies we've seen. So like what have been your experiences with James Wan's movies?
I've seen a lot of his movies from Saw to, of course, Aquaman to The Conjuring 1 and 2. Really wish he did the third movie. That was a heap of garbage.
Yeah, the third movie was pretty weak.
I think he's a very well-balanced director, and he's definitely becoming like a big name, especially in the horror. Like, I wouldn't say like he is getting there in terms of like being up there with like Carpenter and Raimi and whatnot, but he's getting there. I don't think he's gotten his, I know he's done Insidious and The Conjuring, but he just needs like a few more hits, and then he will be like, I think he'll be like remembered as like the next Raimi or Carpenter or Hooper.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he already has like a pretty big reputation. The first movie by him I ever watched was Saw. I've probably told this story over and over about how like I got into the Saw movies when I was like 11 going on 12 back in 2006. I watched the first 3 that year and then kept up with the series since. And yeah, I was like really impressed with that first Saw movie. It's still like I enjoy each of them to different extents, but the first Saw movie is my favorite of the bunch, and it's the only one he's directed. Also enjoyed Dead Silence and Death Sentence. Like,
oh,
I actually,
yeah, I forgot he did Dead Silence.
Yeah, kind of funny how both of those movies sound kind of similar but are totally unrelated in their premise. Like Dead Silence is the one with the
Are they puppets or dummies? I can't remember which one they are.
They're ventriloquist dummies.
Okay, yeah. And I remember Donnie Wahlberg was in that one too, and he's in a couple of the Saw sequels. And yeah, that, I remember enjoying that movie. And then Death Sentence, I actually prefer over what I've seen of the Death Wish movies. And like, they're both based on the same source material. And I just feel like, whereas Death Wish is kind of like the dad or whatever who's avenging his family seems invincible, I feel like Death Sentence feels more realistic and more sad, which like I feel like it just feels more real. And I've seen the Insidious and Conjuring movies he's done as well. Oh, he directed Furious 7. I forgot about that.
Oh yeah, he did do that.
Yeah.
I think that's what got him the ability to direct Aquaman. Like, I think because everyone said it was because of Furious 7 that he got to direct Aquaman.
Well, I don't know. Like in the beginning of Saw 1, it begins with a guy in the water in a bathtub. So maybe that was his Aquaman audition, for all we know.
I mean, maybe.
Hashtag Aquaman. But anyway, yeah, I enjoyed Aquaman. It's full of cliches, but I find little to dislike about it. It's kind of surprising that it's not a James Cameron movie, given how much he loves underwater stuff. But yeah, we got that other James directing it, James Wan. And yeah, so that brings us to Malignant. Now, so like Aquaman and Furious 7 are definitely kind of weird because they're more of the blockbustery type ones. Whereas with Malignant, it's like James Wan is back with horror, and it's kind of a familiar premise. Like the imaginary friend angle actually kind of reminds me of the Paranormal Activity movies, which I didn't really enjoy that much. Did you get kind of similar vibes? I don't know how familiar you are with those.
I've seen a lot of like paranormal movies where it's believed to be like an imaginary friend, but here it's kind of done a little bit different in that it's a grown woman with a imaginary friend coming back. It's like,
yeah,
it's an interesting turn. And also it's kind of like you said, Juan had done big budget movies, and it's kind of interesting to see him come back to do like small screen stuff and in familiar territory. It is very much like, now that I think, it is a lot like John Carpenter, who would do these big budget movies and then sometimes just kind of slink back into do these small budget movies.
Yeah, me and Greg and a couple other friends have been going through John Carpenter's filmography, and he definitely has some of those. He'll have those horror movies, like some are really good, some are kind of meh, but he'll also have like kind of an odd outlier, like Memoirs of an Invisible Man, which I actually really enjoyed. I don't understand the low scores for that one. It's kind of a dark comedy. It's not really horror like his other stuff. But yeah, I do kind of like when directors are able to move between high budget and low budget stuff. It shows that they're not boxing themselves in just one corner and they're open to doing various different things.
Yeah. Having said that though, I think we actually talked about this before the review. I couldn't, if you tried to tell me the plot for this movie, I would instantly go to that new Neil Blomkamp movie, Demonic, because it literally, like, this movie and that movie blended in my brain because it all sounded so similar.
Yeah, and it's been a while for this one, but yeah, like the titles, they both have a similar vibe to them. I'm not really familiar with the premise of Demonic, but yeah, it's like it's that one word title with three syllables. Like it kind of has like a similar vibe, but
supernatural and science put together and mixing the two and like dealing with the mindscape and whatnot. I was like, it's literally the same movie. It's just a few things. Like it's literally feels like the same movie over again.
Yeah, like there are lots of ideas that get redone and remixed and whatever. And sometimes it's like they're unaware of the other thing. And sometimes they'll have like DreamWorks and Pixar competing and like one will steal from the other, that type of thing. But yeah, what also kind of reminded me of the... So I guess we should like kind of describe the premise of Malignant a bit. We have Madison, who's played by Annabelle Wallace. What's kind of confusing is that there's also another character played by Maddie Hassan. So it kind of like get them mixed together in my brain sometimes. But anyway, so Madison is all grown up and she gets these visions of people getting murdered. Like there's one of them is named Dr. Florence Weaver. And when she sees them on the TV, she's like really scared and she tells her family about it. Like you have the mom and you have McKenna Grace's character. And yeah, like it's like she's getting these premonitions and like seeing these murders as they happen. And it feels very real to her. And the other thing that kind of reminded me of Paranormal Activity was that they got like the videotape of like her 9th birthday party. And it shows her talking to her imaginary friend, Gabriel. And now she's wondering, like, is Gabriel back somehow, like in the flesh or otherwise or whatever, causing all this stuff? So like, what'd you think about how her visions looked, like how they were depicted on the screen?
A little trippy. And I think they tried to go a little too much did you get a Final Destination feel from them? Because I did.
So I feel like I've gotten glimpses of maybe the first two when I was a kid, but I haven't like fully watched any of those movies to have a good grasp on what they're like. I just know that there's like a roller coaster or something in one of them and people die and et cetera. But yeah, do you want to elaborate on that?
Well, what I mean is like there's a scene where it goes on its merry way and then you see every character die brutally and then it cuts back to the person having the premonition and then they freak out and leave. It feels kind of like that in this movie where you see the kill and then she freaks out, no one believes her, then the kill happens, probably even worse second time around, and sometimes she even makes it worse. But yeah, I was just like, that's what it felt like.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and in some horror movies, there's that trope where like the people close to the protagonists don't believe them for a while. And it gets really annoying to the audience because obviously we know more than the secondary characters know. But it is kind of realistic that they don't believe the protagonist at first. Maddie's visions do look really trippy. Like sometimes they'll show like the walls or objects in a room look like they are melting, and it kind of looks like they turn into like, for example, there's like a light blue lamp in one of these rooms in her visions and it kind of melts into paint that's of that same color, and it looks actually kind of artistic and beautiful, but it's also like somehow really horrifying the way that she's reacting to this and how it all looks. I definitely agree that it looks really trippy. I think it's kind of well done from a visual standpoint.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about like the big reveal first? Because it was kind of like the more you thought about it, especially from the title, it was like, oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah. I mean, in our universe, it's been a year since this came out, so we might as well just talk about the reveal and then I guess go back and forth or whatever. Like there's no order to this. So like, let's talk about the reveal then.
Yeah, so the whole thing of Malignant is that it isn't really a demonic force. It's just she's had a tumor growing on a certain part of her brain that's like been activating like a certain like mental ability she's had. And now it's just lashing out of control because that tumor is like pushing further and growing even more. So yeah. It's really a supernatural. Like, I do like that twist of like, it's not really a supernatural threat. It's like a physical threat. Like it's like, it's still like paranormal, but like, it's not like demonic in nature.
Right. I think James Wan had said that this isn't an adaptation of his comic or graphic novel, Malignant Man or whatever it was called, which I think has kind of a similar premise involving a tumor, but I guess he kind of got away with saying that because it's not like an exact adaptation of that. It's kind of a similar idea, like there is a tumor involved, it's just a different story and different use, I guess.
If Carrie had a tumor, this is what this movie is. It's Carrie, but if she had a brain tumor.
Yeah, it also kind of reminds me of that fan theory that someone posted where it was like in Saw, like what if the tumor like controls John Kramer and it's what turned him evil or whatever, and it's like, that's probably not the intention was, but if this were like Osmosis Jones or something, then I could kind of see that being what happens. But yeah, anyway, so I guess in a way it's kind of James Wan revisiting an idea or a theme that he's used before and remixing it and whatnot. And like when you think about it, like it makes sense. Like the title Malignant, it can refer to that, like a malignant tumor, but also just something being very malevolent. And I'm sure some people predicted it, but I feel like the execution was pretty good.
Yeah. It's like, it's also like, it's like her deep rooted anger, like lashing out uncontrollably. And it's actually kind of funny, like, again, making that Carrie connection, because it is just like her power just kind of like lashing out. And also, it actually, like, it's kind of weird that they do reference The Shining. They basically talk about how Gabriel isn't really real. He was just a manifestation of her power, and that was just how she coped with it. Kind of like how Danny Torrance, when he was a kid, when he was using his Shining, he thought it was an imaginary friend called Tony.
Yeah, so Gabriel was not Gabriel, I guess you could say.
Get out.
All right, I guess that's my one. But but yeah, I definitely get that Shining connection. This is a tangent, but have you ever seen like the 90s Shining miniseries or just a 1980 film?
I've never seen the original, I've like seen bits and pieces of the miniseries.
Okay. Yeah, I've been meaning to watch the miniseries. Like, even though it's probably not as good film-wise as the 1980 film, I know it's like in some ways supposed to be closer to the book, and I'm just kind of curious to see how some of the stuff plays out on the small screen, like even if it looks pretty bad. But throughout Malignant, I don't know about you, but I was like pretty much under the assumption that, yeah, Madison is like, she's not necessarily committing like these murders, or like it's like she's just getting visions of someone else doing them. And so when it was revealed that like, this was what was happening, like I was actually really surprised.
Yeah, like it's not even like she hates these people, it's more like, oh sorry, my powers are just kind of like, look, you know, lashing out, and they just found you, sorry bro.
Yeah, like the malignant tumor is basically using her as a puppet in a way, or a ventriloquist dummy. So it's kind of like James Wan intentionally or not revisiting a similar idea, I guess you could say.
See, I didn't like that part where they kind of like throw that out there. Is like, is it really a malignant tumor, or is it some kind of demonic force in her mind? We don't know. I'm like, pick a lane, Wan.
Yeah, I mean, ambiguous twists can be hit or miss. Like, there's some endings where the ambiguity is fun to discuss and talk about. It's like, oh, could it be this or could it be that? Like with Blade Runner. But there are other things like Inception, I would say, like, in my opinion, where I'm like, just pick one thing. Like, just do it. So I guess with this, I do kind of agree that I lean more toward the pick your lane sort of option, because it's like, I know the scary thing is that there are forces that we don't understand in these types of horror movies, but it'd be nice to know the internal consistency, at least in broad strokes, of like how everything is going on. Because as good as this movie is, there's still that aspect of people sort of walking out and scratching their heads over like how it all works. And that's kind of like, you want a thought-provoking discussion as opposed to a head scratcher discussion. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but yeah, that's the point I'm making.
Yeah, it also doesn't help that we take like a good chunk of the second act of the movie, like going to a church and talking about this with Jason Alexander, who plays a priest.
Yeah, well, like it's very trippy seeing him here and in Spider-Man No Way Home. But yeah, like this is actually interesting, because I don't know if you know this, but Jason Alexander, like the earliest thing of his filmography that I've seen is this slasher movie called The Burning. It came out in 1981. And if you look at that movie, it's like he has like a full head of hair and he's playing like a teenage camper, like the practical Joker type of character. And it was just so odd seeing him in that movie when I watched it like over a decade ago or whenever it was.
Yeah. And it doesn't help. Like, I was even like, okay, Juan, enough. When the character's name is Father Newman.
Yeah.
I was literally like, okay, you had your fun.
Yeah. I wonder how big of a Seinfeld fan James Wan might be. But yeah, it was hard for me to take those scenes seriously when they were talking to him. Like I know Jason Alexander can do good dramatic stuff every now and then if he really tries it. But the way he looks, I just couldn't like take him seriously here.
Yeah, I was like, why are you... What's with the eye patch, man? I know you're trying to act, but you've lost all credibility when your character is Father Newman. You will not have me think of him in a serious role while I'm thinking in the back of my head the latest Seinfeld joke, good sir.
Yeah, and he doesn't really explain the eye patch. It's kind of weird. It's sort of just there, and it's like, if it doesn't serve a purpose, why is the eye patch even there? It's almost, I kind of wonder if maybe the Seinfeld fans in the audience were supposed to think of that joke where it's like, oh, I don't want to be a pirate or something like that. But yeah, it's just an odd choice. And I feel like they gave him a bit too much screen time in the second act when they were talking to him about what was going on.
Yeah. And also he just does one exposition dump after one after another.
Yeah, he talks about like past incidents or people experienced something similar. And he was like, I can't really explain it. Maybe it's like a similar threat that is controlling all these different things. And it's just like really confusing, like as much as he tries to explain it.
Yeah, he even like, I was like, you ain't slick when he brings up he tells this one story of like, there was a story of a boy and his mother in a hotel. And I was like, don't do this. And he's like, they're something in the hotel drove their father. And so I was like, no, don't do this. And they did. They directly referenced The Shining.
Yeah. Well, like they mentioned the hotel name and everything. It's really weird.
Yeah. I'm like, this isn't even a Stephen King adaptation. You're just doing this one because it's under Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
You can get away with that.
Yeah. It was just such an eye rolly moment. It was not a good shout out. Like there's some movies like I recently watched Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and it's like with a movie like that that's kind of dumb and poking fun at itself, you can make all these shout outs to various things that Kevin Smith has worked on or like what the actors have been in and fill it with puns, and like that's my jam. But here it's like with Malignant, I expected it to be a bit more serious, and it ended up being instead we got something that was closer to The Curse of La Llorona in terms of like the humor that kept popping up.
Well, to be fair, Juan has done this before, especially in, like, remember Dead Silence and how there's like some awkward comedy there. I think that's him like giving a nod to like Evil Dead stuff. I'm like, you're not Sam Raimi, dude.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've seen Dead Silence, so maybe there's some humor I'm forgetting. But I do remember in the first Saw movie, there is some humor that is done pretty well, I think. Like there's Lee Winnell's character, Adam, would say stuff like, I woke up in my shithole apartment and woke up in an actual shithole or crap hole, if you'd rather. Yeah. Or when they like fake the cigarette thing, like that part was so awkwardly funny, but it worked for me in that first Saw movie.
Yeah, but I will say Newman got the best, one of the best deaths in this movie.
Newman's death was like, it was very surprising to see an Iron Maiden come into play. Like he basically just, like he was just doing his thing and then he walks down a hallway and then that thing gets sprung on him, and feels like another instance of James Wan reusing an idea, because I think they were supposed to originally use an Iron Maiden on the first Saw movie, and then they reused it for one of the Saw video games. I think it was the first one, but yeah, like that was kind of, it was visceral, but it also kind of took me out knowing that it was a recycled thing. But I don't know if anyone else really notices.
I will say that at least they like use the Chekhov's gun thing of like, because Newman brings her to like a collection of like all these things are like connected to similar cases throughout the ages, and I've collected them here, and I'm like, oh, so we're just now knocking off your other film, aren't you, Juan? But at least Chekhov's guns it and talk about the Iron Maiden. So when, and also it's like even the finishing move, like, because first, quote unquote, Gabriel like lifts Newman into the air, rips off all of his skin like it's like a freaking tuxedo, then throws him into the Iron Maiden and slams it shut. And I was like, Jesus.
Yeah, I do appreciate that they at least showed restraint by not playing an Iron Maiden song in that particular moment.
I was half expecting it.
Yeah, like, how would he have reacted if, like, when that happened, like, the Iron Maiden, scene, like, if the song started playing?
I'd have shut off the movie.
Picked up Dude, your recliner and thrown it at the screen.
Yeah, I did just, if they started playing Number of the Beast at that moment, I'd have been like, nope. you had your fun, it's over.
But there are also like some other interesting deaths in this movie. Like you see someone get thrown like through a ceiling, like from the top floor to the bottom floor. And you see someone get defenestrated out of like a 6-story building or something. And yeah, like the cinematography in those moments, I thought looked pretty cool. But I don't know, what did you think of some of these other death scenes?
This had quite the body count. And I'm a bit of a gore hound anyway. I'm very impressed, because if it's one thing Juan can do, it's gore with the scares. Like there's one with a store clerk who's just, you know, minding his own business. And then Gabriel, quote unquote, grabs him, slams him to the table, and then like pushes his head through a bread cutter. I was like, oh, but then again, like it was cool. But at the same time, I was like, I saw this in Fear Street already.
Yeah, I watched those. I thought they were okay. Like, I don't know what I was expecting, but there came a point where in the second or third one, maybe both of those, I was like checking the time and being like, wait, this movie's not almost over yet. How's that possible? And I was just kind of, I was just kind of over those movies, but I don't know if I'm in the minority. Like, what'd you think of those movies?
They're all right. They're like, I think, what American Horror Story wanted to always be.
Yeah, I watched the first 3 seasons of American Horror Story. I love the first season. Like, it felt fresh and new to me, a murder house. But then I wasn't as impressed with Asylum. And then Coven, I mainly liked just because of Stevie Nicks singing and whatever. But after that, I lost interest. But I watched the Red Tide or whatever it was called, and that was pretty good. I watched that. I felt really engaged with it. I don't know, it was because one of the characters was a writer and they talked about writing, but I thought it was pretty cool. I don't know if I'm going to go back and rewatch the other seasons, though. I don't know how invested I am, but I do kind of like that it's an anthology, so I can just like jump into whatever I feel I can, just ignore whatever I want to ignore, I guess. But yeah, like one of the other death scenes that I thought was... Like there was that death scene in the shoe factory, and you know, it feels like one of those other, we've seen this in other movies where like characters are in a factory and like the machinery like almost kills them or whatever. And this, like, it ends up killing the person. Like there's even a moment where like the machinery kills one of the people working there, but there's also a moment where like Gabriel just gets like a sneaker and shoves it into someone's throat until they choke to death on it. And that was kind of hard for me to take seriously, not gonna lie, but it was kind of thinking outside the box, I guess, but I don't know.
At least they didn't get hanged by shoelaces.
Has that happened in something else you've seen?
I'm sure it's out there in some 80s slasher movie. I'm shocked that's not a death in the Scream movie.
Yeah, I could see that happening in a Scream movie. Like, it's like those movies can get so goofy, but it kind of works because of how meta they are. So I could definitely see like a shoelace death there. James Wan also recycles, like, I guess he really likes using restrooms in his movies, because we even get a death in a public restroom. Like someone like like Gabriel goes in, and after someone like washes their hands, he like brings them and like slams their head between the like doors of the stall and basically like ends up cutting up the person and trying to flush them down the toilet. And then you see like lots of gore coming out of the toilet because like obviously it's gonna overflow. And yeah, it was kind of predictable, but I guess it was fine.
Yeah. It is weird, though, that we have, like, even though the second half is a slow scene, we do get some gory deaths, but at the same time, it's like, oh my god, this is awful. Let me go talk to Father Newman again. And it's just rinse and repeat.
Which is really, like, this movie gets, like, really repetitive at a certain point, which is a shame, because, like, it had so much promise, and there were some cool moments here and there, but it's like, man, like, this could have really been better. Like they have, like, this scene where it's just a 5-minute discussion of pineapples and like whether they work on like pizza versus whether they work on ham or like other weird combinations like pineapple and PB&J. And it's like, what was the point of this scene? It like served no purpose.
Yeah.
There's also a high body count in the block party scene. Like in these types of scenes, I usually expect like only one of the people to die and then like everyone sees them like full on display, but here like it was like half the block party attendees got killed by quote unquote Gabriel, and it's like, whoa, we're really going at all out with the death count here. Like what'd you think of some of the weapons that Gabriel ended up using?
It's very reminiscent of, like, again, we mentioned, you know, Stephen King stuff before, but it's very reminiscent of like that final scene in Carrie where everyone's just getting murdered in the school. There's one person who like a fire hydrant, like, and this is impossible, but like a fire hydrant comes loose and like blows a hole through a guy. There's another where a woman, a billboard comes apart and like swings through and cuts her in half, like split bifurcates her down the middle. Like, I'm like, James Wan, like, I know you didn't direct Mortal Kombat, but maybe you should have. Mortal Kombat. Yeah, he didn't direct that one. He just produced, which maybe he should have directed.
Yeah, but instead he directed this, apparently. So, yeah, what'd you think of the music throughout this movie? Like, the score by Joseph Bishara?
It's not bad. I think it's serviceable. It's not anything memorable, I will say, but I feel like I've heard I've heard him compose music before.
Yeah, I think he might have done, okay, he's done The Conjuring and Insidious.
That'll do it. Like that just kind of, ooh, creepy music, but it's loud when it needs to be. Yeah, nothing special, but I knew I heard that name before.
Yeah. Oh, he was also a producer on Repo: The Genetic Opera, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I really like that opera.
That's an amazing film. It's, I wish more people would watch it. Like, the music is so good and the effects are spectacular. It's like, it's pretty gory. But like the story is really well told, in my opinion.
Have you ever seen like the Devil's Carnival movies?
I've seen the first one. I didn't realize until recently that there was a second one, so I really need to get on that with the second one.
Yeah, that one, like, it has some guest stars in there. I was like, wow, how did you get here?
Yeah, because I think Bill Moseley is in both Repo and Devil's Carnival, if I'm not mistaken. Like, Bill Moseley, who's been in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 as Chop Top, and he was in those Rob Zombie movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, second film of Devil's Carnival, Ted Neely, Jesus Christ from Jesus Christ Superstar, is in that movie.
Oh, okay. I've never seen that movie, but.
But, like, well, my family kind of grew up on that one, so it was like Ted Neely. I was like, wait, what the heck? What are you doing here, Ted? Also, Tech N9ne, the rapper, is in that movie, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not very familiar with rappers in general, but that's pretty cool.
I don't know. Like, it was just like, it's such an odd. Well, I'm sorry. We're getting off topic.
No, it's cool. I mean, it's all horror and like semi-related. Well, like, I think the director of Devil's Carnival and Repo directed Saw 2, 3, and 4, and Spiral, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he's directed a good chunk of the Saw sequels, but yeah. But anyway, getting back to Malignant. Yeah, I agree. The music was, it evoked a feeling of creepiness that you could tell they were trying to do, but it wasn't very memorable, and it wasn't, it didn't really stand out to me. Like, I wasn't as impressed with it as I am with other things. Yeah, like, do you want to talk about how the movie ends, or is there anything else you want to go over?
No, we can talk about the ending.
I'm not really sure how I feel about this ending. Like, what were your feelings over it?
I feel like the ending where it all comes together and the reveal that Gabriel is just a Tuma.
Oh, is that supposed to be like Schwarzenegger?
Yeah. It's a Tuma.
Okay. Yeah, I rewatched Batman and Robin recently. It's stupid fun, but yeah. Sorry, is that line from like a specific movie he's been in, or was that just an impression?
Kindergarten Cop.
Oh, is that like the Christmas one?
No, that's Jingle All the Way.
Oh, okay. I've never seen Kindergarten Cop then.
It's literally the most memeable. It's literally like we're 90% of, aside from Batman and Robin, the most memeable Schwarzenegger movie.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to check it out then, I guess. But yeah, so it's revealed that like it's this tumor that's like making her do all these things. And like McKenna Grace's character is like, you can see how upset she is finding out this revelation. For a teen actor, like, her emotions felt very convincing, I think. Madison's realization that she was doing all this Gabriel stuff, and it's like how do you live with yourself once you like learn all that stuff? And it's like she like reaches onto her head, pulling on her hair, and you kind of see the world spinning around her, and it's like she's getting this vision of like the room just melting away. And I guess that's supposed to convey her like basically losing it over this revelation. Like, she's just really in shock over this and doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, it's like it's weird because it's like it comes out of nowhere. I'm like, okay, is this her breaking reality, or is it her breaking her own reality? I don't like, you didn't do the best transition there, Juan.
Yeah, it's like, is this all in her head, or is she doing this? Like we see some of the characters, her family's like flesh ripping away, kind of like in Terminator 2, but without the explosion. It's like, it's, you know, it's like CGI effects and whatever. And it's like, is this supposed to be literal or metaphorical? Like, I'm not really sure I understand.
Excuse me, Steven. It's supposed to be, it's metaphorical.
Right. Fair enough. But yeah, like the way that everything like sort of fizzles out toward the end, like it feels really abrupt, and like the payoff wasn't as satisfying as I hoped it would be, because like this is a James Wan movie, and I usually expect there to be like a really good payoff for his horror movies, or at least a satisfying conclusion. But this I had mixed feelings about. Like, was there a better way they could have done this, or was it just always set up to fail? Like, I don't know.
Like, I feel like Juan was trying to be too much, like make his own carry, but have like a mystery to it. It made me go, oh, all right. You tried to do the carry ending, but on a gorier level. Okay.
Yeah. He just kind of got carried away.
Let it go, Multi.
Dead silence. And it was like really confusing, and then like the credits come up, and it was like, oh, okay, I guess that was a movie. But like, how do you feel this stacks up against like other horror movies that are kind of in this vein?
I feel like it's better, but like at the same time, I feel like that second act where it just slows down really like bogs, like, but the gore is good. There is some legit scares. But at the same time, I've seen this story before in two Stephen King stories, mind you. So I was just like, it's not terrible, but it's not going to be remembered as like Juan's strongest work.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, I feel like the ending could kind of stand on its own. It doesn't seem very overtly like it could be sequelized. So, like, I feel like because it, like, if it doesn't get sequelized, I feel like it might not be as remembered as The Conjuring or Insidious, because I feel like there's more brand awareness for those and for the Saw movies, especially thanks to like the sequel numbering. I think like it's just kind of a side effect that comes with that type of thing.
Yeah, I'm kind of okay if this is just a one and done movie. Like, it's just a nice little pet project for Juan to do. Not everything needs to be a franchise sometimes.
Right. Yeah. So I guess unless there's anything else you want to bring up, we can go into final thoughts and score out of 10.
All right, you go first.
This had interesting sequences. Like, it got surreal with the visions. Some of the kills were interesting, kind of creative, but also kind of goofy at times. Like, it kind of just went back and forth on the spectrum of like, how serious should I take this to how much should I laugh at this type of thing. And it, like, it felt very wishy-washy with the tone. And like, some of these characters aren't very memorable. I feel like I didn't care enough about like some of the characters who were dying throughout this movie, which is a shame, because you would think that with a James Wan movie, there would be a bit more effort. Like, it feels like it was just an experiment for him to do at the side, but at the same time, like, he didn't really give it his all in this one, at least in our universe. Maybe it's better in the other universe, we'll have to see. I think Malignant, as we have seen it, I would give it a 6.6 out of 10 shoes.
I agree with that. I mean, Carpenter didn't have a hit every time. And I know, like, comparing to Carpenter to Juan, but that's where I feel like Juan's film career is going, is like, it's the new John Carpenter. It's like such an array of different films. So it's kind of hard not to compare. So, you know, not every director is going to have like a hit every time. Even Spielberg has his ups. but like, it's still good. It's still like, it's like Simpsons. It's still good. It's still good. It's just a crappy movie. It's still good. It's still good. having said that, I do feel like the second act really hurts this film, and the fact that we're trying to shoehorn like connections to Stephen King movies, even though this is not a Stephen King story, literally makes me go ugh. So I'm gonna give this 6 bifurcated women out of 10.
Yeah, just like the ones we saw in the movie. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Even a director as big as James Wan or some of those others you mentioned aren't always going to have a hit. But that being said, I hope that in the near future, there's another James Wan movie that gives me like the feeling that I felt when watching Lee Whannell's The Invisible Man, and how surprisingly good that remake was, like how it was modernized. And like, when I finished watching that movie and like saw directed by Lee Whannell, I didn't realize he made that one, and I was like really surprised, and it just felt like a victory seeing how far he's come since he and James Wan did Saw. But yeah, I'm sure James Wan will make something good in the future, like he's done in the past. At this moment, Malignant is just kind of there, I guess. But yeah, I guess that'll do it. Thanks for joining me again, Mr. Multiverse. Where can people find your content?
They can find me on Mr. Multiverse on YouTube. And that's pretty much it. Although I am banting on getting a Patreon at some point, mostly because my real job is killing me psychologically and physically.
Oh, wow. Sounds like that could be a horror movie.
yeah. Working like 20 hours a week for pittance. Oh yeah, it's a horror movie. It's a real life horror movie.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So go ahead and check out his content over on YouTube. You can find me at Steven Schinder on Instagram and Twitter, Steven Schinder Storytelling on Facebook. You can find my fantasy horror comedy novel, Lemons Will Make Rain, on Amazon. It has like werewolves, a vampire, and all sorts of stuff. And I'm still working on the next book, so there will be news on that when it comes out, and when new info on it comes out, rather. And I've also been doing a podcast called Yes Shift. Been doing that with my dad, talking about the progressive rock band Yes. You can find that on anchor.fm/yesshift, and you'll find all the different places that's on, just like how you can find Delayed Replay on Anchor and all sorts of different places. And if you want to email Delayed Replay, you can email delayedreplaypodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of horror movies, I guess. Or anything. I don't know. And I think next episode, I'll have to look at the schedule again, but it'll probably be the Resident Evil reboot. Until then, thanks for listening. And without further delay, have a good day.
Hey, listeners, this is Editor Steven. After the fact, a week after this episode comes out, the Saturday will be September 11th, the 20th anniversary of that very terrible day. The next episode, which will be on Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City, will be delayed, so it won't come out on that day. It might even come out the Saturday after, might take the week off. But anyway, just letting you know, just so you're not surprised, and just so you know what's ahead for next time. Stay well, stay safe, and without further delay, have a good day.